no es una cantidad fácil. Sabemos que todo el mundo estamos con el bolsillo un poco apretado, pero por favor sigan llamando 818-985-KPFK.
Vamos a tener que dejar de gastar tanto en chupe para las posadas, porque acá es donde todos necesitamos poner el dinero. Les vamos a recordar rápidamente los premios que tenemos ahora, las aportaciones tangibles que nosotros estamos ofreciendo. Son $30 por el DVD Marx ha vuelto, $30 por el DVD Ojalá de Silvio Rodríguez. La canción Súbele que Súbele la estamos incluyendo, por supuesto, en cada uno de estos obsequios. $25 son las 5 ediciones de su programa Así es Nuestra Cultura. Por $25 el DVD editado con lo mejor de la música de nuestro reciente homenaje a Fidel. El paquete completo que lo llamamos Guacalito Navideño, $100 nada más, todo por $100.
Así es, y tenemos la película, las dos películas, Nuevo Mundo, también La Lluvia, por $20, y el Guacalito Navideño, que incluye todo, $100. Llámenos 818-985-5735. Vámonos al siguiente audio.
¡Silencio!
Yo diría acción.
No San Benaúl. No sé si para Ñuranca fuera Juan Ceci.
Ahora bien, tenemos otra opción. Si decides convertirte en un patrocinador mensual de nuestra radio hogar, con solo $20 al mes, te enviaremos, para empezar, nada más, las siguientes dos películas en español.
La película Nuevo Mundo y la película también La Lluvia.
Para aclararles por segunda ocasión, si nos donas $20 al mes, te vamos a enviar estas dos películas y en cada una de las siguientes recaudaciones de fondo te enviaremos un título nuevo, siempre con una importancia cultural e histórica.
Vamos a escuchar un segmento de esta película Nuevo Mundo.
¡Capitán! No hay otros. Con esta gente trabaja la labranza, el molino. ¿Dónde están los demás?
Se fueron.
¿Por qué?
Si yo supiera,
mis hombres se encargarán de su carruaje con cuerdas y caballos.
Sírvase de pasar adelante.
Acompáñalo, capitán.
Y cuando cruzamos los puentes y las calzadas del gran pueblo de indios, arranqué esta rama. Encajó también en mi mano, que desde entonces siempre la he llevado conmigo.
¿Por qué solo hay ancianos y niños, don Diego? ¿Dónde están sus encomendados?
No los quieren, y tienen razón. Los hemos despojado de todos sus bienes y de todas sus creencias.
Yo estoy aquí para convertirlos en fieles creyentes de nuestra Santa Madre Iglesia.
Y para ayudar a esclavizar.
No olvide que está hablando la Santa Hermandad.
¡Ya, Tefi! ¡Marucuan! ¡Achatichan!
Nuevo Mundo es un controversial filme que cuestiona nada menos que el mito guadalupano. Nos plantea cómo, para someter a los indios, un sacerdote jesuita inventa la presencia de una virgen que pide la conciliación entre conquistadores y conquistados.
Esta película nos presenta una alegoría del violento método utilizado por los españoles para imponer su religión y asumir con ello un completo poder político y religioso sobre los indígenas.
Producida en 1976, La película Nuevo Mundo fue boicoteada en su exhibición y vetada por el altamente controversial tema al que hace referencia, el sometimiento de un pueblo a través de una imagen, de un ícono.
La película Nuevo Mundo, de Gabriel Retes, es un relato de la conquista espiritual española mediante la fabricación de una virgen indígena a principios del siglo XVI. Esta película pasó inadvertida en su época debido a la férrea censura que ejerció el gobierno hace más de 40 años.
Es pues así que Nuevo Mundo es un filme que ni siquiera los mexicanos han tenido la oportunidad de ver. Es así de fundamental su divulgación.
Y la censura fue encabezada, por supuesto, por Margarita López Portillo, cuando su hermano, el entonces presidente de la República, José López Portillo, la nombró directora de Radio, Televisión y Cinematografía de la Secretaría de Gobernación.
Para tratar de aminorar las críticas y la controversia
controversia, la proyectó sin publicidad únicamente 4 días en cines de poca afluencia: el cine Ciudadela, el cine Tlalpan, el Atoyac, el Alameda 1 y el cinema Aragón 2, a partir del jueves 10 de agosto de 1978.
Desde su óptica retrógrada, Margarita López Portillo y sus secuaces la congelaron. Ella odiaba este filme porque en su mediocre criterio atentaba contra la moral y las buenas costumbres.
Los productores incluso quisieron llevársela a los festivales de Cannes y de Berlín, y Margarita López Portillo simplemente no la dejó salir de sus bodegas.
Del taller de escritores cinematográficos surgió el guion original El Inquisidor, de Pedro Miret, que Retenes filmó con el título Nuevo Mundo, la historia de la creación de un ícono religioso utilizado por los españoles como arma de conquista cuando los conquistadores se enfrentaron a la evangelización de los indígenas, de cultura profundamente espiritual, pero renuentes a cambiar su religión.
Ante la incipiente revuelta, Fray Pedro le pedirá a un pintor indígena que pintara una virgen que aplacara a la indiada.
Escuchemos parte de esta película.
¿La recuerda? Ultra humanum perseverare.
Perseverar más allá de lo humano. Es una frase muy sabia. Pero un mono también persevera más allá de su condición cuando trata de sacar de una vasija una nuez con el puño cerrado.
¿Qué va a pasar?
Escúchame, este enfrentamiento va a pasar. Va a pasar y se va a olvidar. Ok, nuestra película no. Nuestra película va a durar para siempre. Por favor.
Está cabrón, estos la van a armar.
No lo van a hacer. Os haremos esclavos y dispondremos de vosotros a voluntad. Nos apropiaremos de vuestras posesiones y os causaremos tanto dolor como podamos.
¡El agua no está cara!
Constitucional democráticamente elegido.
Chris, averigua donde lo tienen encerrado y te enteras del nombre del jefe de la comisaría y me arreglas una reunión conmigo.
¿Dónde chingados están mis indígenas?
Si cedemos un centímetro, estos indios nos llevarán de nuevo a la edad de piedra.
Haz entender, por favor, hijo, que quede en algo, que tenga palabra el cabrón. Joder, Daniel, es la única puta oportunidad que tienes de salir de esta mierda. A ver, sitio en que vives, coño.
Pasamos ahora al segundo DVD, Jali, que tenemos esta noche para todos ustedes. El de la película titulada También la lluvia, dirigida por Isiar Boyaín, publicada en 2009 e interpretada por Luis Tosar, Gael García Bernal, Raúl Arévalo, Carlos Santos y Juan Carlos Adjubiri.
Los personajes centrales, Sebastián y Costa, ambos treintañeros, se han propuesto hacer una película sobre uno de los grandes íconos mundiales, Cristóbal Colón.
Nada más Cristóbal Colón. Mientras que Sebastián, uno de los personajes, quiere como director darle la vuelta al mito y presentar al colono obsesionado por el oro, cazador de esclavos, represor de indios. A Costa solamente le importa sacar la película adelante con el modesto presupuesto del que disponen, incluso si para ello hay que rodar en Bolivia, uno de los países más baratos y con mayor población indígena de América Latina.
Costa.
Así es, esto es uno más de nuestros DVDs que ofrecemos, la película También la lluvia, sobre un equipo de filmación que se va a Bolivia a hacer una película sobre la conquista y los atrapa una situación de revolución porque les quieren quitar el agua allí en Bolivia y ellos se ven atrapados en la revuelta. Y pues esto viene muy ad hoc con la situación allá en Dakota del Norte. También los grupos indígenas defendiendo el agua para todos en este país, en el mundo entero.
Bueno, les vamos a anunciar que nadie llamó para lo de la subasta, así es que no vamos a cantar de aquí hasta el próximo año.
Sí, ¿parece? Vamos a ponernos en huelga.
Estamos en huelga. Ensamble Cimarrón está en huelga, definitivamente. Ni siquiera sí. Fernando se puso las pilas.
Vaya, necesitamos insistirles, por supuesto, que sigan hablando, que sigan ofreciéndonos su contribución, 818-985-5735.
Agradecemos a nuestro técnico en cabina, Federico García, muchas gracias por todo, a nuestro coordinador de piso, Fernando Velázquez.
Enseguida viene un programa especial con el documental American Empire, el Imperio Americano, la avaricia de las multinacionales y la destrucción del planeta como efecto de su extracción y saqueo de los recursos naturales.
Así es, y bueno, síganos en Facebook, Así es Nuestra Cultura, KPFK 90.7. Sintonícenos dentro de 15 días, vamos a seguir en recaudación de fondos. No le cambien, sigan aquí en su estación favorita. Y súbele que súbele, nos vamos, hasta la próxima.
Bye bye.
¿Estás escuchando a esa estación probablemente porque eres una persona que no acepta las mentiras que te imponen los grandes medios de comunicación?
Saddam Hussein has gone to elaborate lengths, spent enormous sums, taken great risks to build and keep weapons of mass destruction.
Porque no te gusta ser interrumpido constantemente por comerciales que te prometen la felicidad a través de anuncios con voces enfadosas.
Sí,
porque piensas que la comida chatarra que te venden pone en riesgo tu salud.
¡Choco Crispies! ¡Gran sabor a chocolate!
Porque eres una persona que siempre está en busca de la verdad. Aprecias la información sin intereses corporativos. Porque el monopolio tecnológico está extendiendo sus tentáculos y están poniendo en riesgo nuestra radio terrestre. Porque sabes que no existen opciones para ti en todo el dial. Sabes que los medios de comunicación no serían igual sin Radio Pacífica. Por eso, cuando nos escuches en recaudación de fondos, haz una donación pequeña a tu programa favorito para que KPFK siga viviendo.
Dear friends of Free Radio Santa Cruz, we are reaching out for a new antenna location. Our current host is losing their house to the rotten scum banks. So we need a small space for our transmitter and computer box, about 2 feet by 2 feet, and a tree for the antenna where it sits hardly noticeable. We also have a tower for the antenna if you do not have a tall tree. It uses about 100 watts of power, about the same as a bright light bulb, and an internet connection. The ideal location would be, let's say, between West Side and 41st Avenue. Would you like to help? We can pay in exchange for your troubles. Please contact us. Write an email to frsc@freakradio.org. Or send a note to FRSC, P.O. Box 7811, Santa Cruz, California. Or, even better, call us during a live show at 831-427-3772. Help us out. We are your community radio.
My name is Brad Johnson. I'm a former Clear Channel radio engineer, and when I'm in Santa Cruz, I listen to Freak Radio Santa Cruz.
So welcome to Free Radio Santa Cruz, the stream at freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris, and for the next 2 hours, you're going to be hearing a recorded show. So call-ins cannot be answered. But if you have any questions or comments on the show, you can leave a message for me at 831-423-4833, and I will get back to you. Today is December 15th. The December 18th Sunday show will likely be live, so for all you folks who are champing to call in, that's a good time to do it. Featured on today's show, special interviews with Mike Lee and Mike Zint, both of the Poor Tour. First, they came for the homeless intentional community, which has been set up in Berkeley and has been going now for 6 weeks, beginning as a protest and continuing as a living alternative. Interesting. I encourage you to stay tuned and listen to those interviews. We'll also be covering some stuff in the last week, as well as looking forward to protests on the 17th, Saturday, that's day after tomorrow, when there will be another attempt to get the police department and the sheriffs to let loose of documents and let loose of video and audio that give us, or could give us, a better understanding of why they killed Sean Arlt and Luke Smith, two people shot by police or deputies in the last 2 months. That protest will be at 1:30 at the town clock, weather permitting, and health of the participants permitting. Some of us have been a bit under the weather for more reasons than one. And however, we encourage you to come on down and check it out. There, of course, will be a Freedom Sleepout 76. That'll be coming up on the 20th of December, just in time for Christmas. Well, Christmas actually will be also the time of another show, December 25th, which I usually do. I usually don't pay much attention to the official holidays. We have to make our own holidays and celebrate them, and hopefully we will.
Set your radio free, yeah. Through the FCC, yeah. Set your radio.
And, of course, we are not really coming in on your radio at the moment. I guess definitely not coming in. We are in search of a transmitter site, as all you regular listeners have heard too much of, but it's still true. Still no site in sight, and we need your help. So if you know of a place where there is a, we could put up an antenna, maybe along the side of a building, maybe along a tree or above a tree or attached to a tree. There you go. Give us a call, or I should say give me a call, and I'll pass on the word to the folks at the collective. My number, again, is 423-4833. And you can also go to the, well, the site you're at right now, which is freakradio.org, and you'll find a contact information there, too. Again, all we need is a location in Santa Cruz or on the outskirts of Santa Cruz. It really has to be on higher ground, but almost anywhere will work, or at least we're interested in investigating whatever proposals you have for us. Need a place to, we need access to power and access to the internet, but we can set up our own little shack, and it's a very small shack, and get in touch, because we'd like to get back on the air. And in fact, well, it shouldn't be taking this long, and maybe with your help it won't. A fuller discussion of the Denver decision by the mayor and the city council there to stop confiscating blankets and tents from homeless people during freezing weather, which should have been obvious from the word go, but apparently has only been made a policy after massive and extensive protests. I was going to be going into this at greater length, but I really haven't got the energy or health tonight to do it. So I will surrender to the inevitable and hope that this can be brought up perhaps on the Sunday show. Although what I really like to do is get some folks from Denver on the air as interviewees, so we can hear what, not just what the mainstream media says, but what the people on the ground say, or the activists who've been fighting the struggle say. But until we get that, let me just pass on to you this story from the Denver Post of a couple of days ago, December 10th, which I picked up online, and it was actually forwarded to me, thank you, by Julie Scholl, a RV dweller, who regularly follows a lot of this stuff and passes on her thoughts and her discoveries to me. Denver police will no longer confiscate blankets and tents from homeless people during cold weather months as part of a change to the city's camping ban. Mayor Michael Hancock announced the decision Saturday as frigid overnight temperatures continue to raise concern about the well-being of the city's homeless population, estimated at more than 3,700. As a city, we have a responsibility and a moral obligation to protect the lives of our residents, Mayor Hancock said in a statement. Urban camping, especially during cold, wet weather, is dangerous, and we don't want to see any lives lost on the street when there are safe, warm places available for people to sleep at night. This actually sounds like it's going in the other direction. And he's going to be attacking urban camping. However, apparently this is part of a larger statement where he is directing the police not to go after homeless encampments, people protecting themselves from the cold. Something that also was promised by the mayor and city council up in Berkeley, or the new council members, of which now there's another one of those progressive majorities that many of us have had some hope in, but at least in Santa Cruz, those hopes have been dashed. And we have a couple coming onto our council, Sandy Brown and Chris Crone. They were sworn in last night and had their little shindig of self-congratulation and schmoozerama at the Civic Auditorium, and where several hours later, nearby, police and rangers drove poor and homeless people out into the cold and the rain from under the eaves of the city hall where they've been trying to get some dry sleep. This has been happening more pointedly and more frequently during the last few Freedom Sleep Out protests. But let me come back to the Denver story and finish that one. And then I'll talk a little bit more about and perhaps play some accounts of what happened. We actually may not get those accounts until a later show, but I'm afraid they're going to be sadly familiar. The shift in the Denver policy came after the civil rights organizations and attorneys demanded Friday that the city stop seizing the property of homeless people and threatened a federal lawsuit, something that we've hoped would be done by the ACLU or the National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty, or helped by HUF or some other groups, and has not yet happened here in Santa Cruz, at least not around the issue of the sleeping ban or the camping ordinance broadly. The Denver article continues, even with the change, the city intends to continue enforcing the camping ban, a violation of which carries a potential penalty of a $999 fine, but police will not confiscate camping equipment through the end of April, according to the mayor's announcement. Denver Homeless Out Loud, an organization fighting the city's camping ban, called the mayor's decision, quote, a big win. This means that people surviving on the streets this winter will have just that much more hope to live through the winter, the organization wrote in a statement posted on its website. Days earlier, more than a dozen homeless people and advocates implored Denver City Council members to stop the efforts to clear encampments in the city. This year, police are taking a more aggressive approach. That's a sort of a gentle way of saying they're brutally violating people's rights. It sounds like homicidally violating people's rights if they've been taking away their survival gear up to this point. The police are taking a more aggressive approach and issuing warnings at higher rates than in the past. Police officers issued 9 citations for violations of the unauthorized camping ordinance to 7 people in the past 2 weeks. I think that what they mean by that phrase is they issued tickets for camping to 7 people in the past 2 weeks. According to the mayor's office, of those cited, police only confiscated camping equipment from 3 people who camped outside the city and county building as a part of a November 28th protest against the city's ordinance. And my thought about that is, if you are selectively enforcing laws more harshly against those who are engaging in peaceful protest, you're adding insult to injury, or adding injury to injury. People have a right to and responsibility and probably a necessity of protesting the situation where people's survival gear is being stolen and their health is being threatened through these constant police interventions, which are intended callously and it's hard to say in Denver because I'm not in Denver, but in generally speaking, this is done at the behest of merchants or NIMBY property owners or renters who, while safe in their own snug little beds, just can't feel safe enough until they drive away all the poor people from the neighborhood. And they'll find dozens of pretexts. Actually, there's a few familiar pretexts, such as the children, the safety of the children. Or they'll start shaking needles at you. Or they'll say, there's feces in urine, when in fact, that's created by the fact that there are no bathrooms available. Again, the attempt is to cover up, to proceed with the deportation and removal of homeless people without acknowledging the human rights violations and the violations of basic human decency that are occurring when this happens. It's also questionable, we are getting these figures from the Denver Post about, oh, they've only issued 9 citations, and 3 of them were because the people were engaging in a protest. And you see that Mike Rutkin, our former mayor, might have said, oh, they want to be arrested. The answer is no. They want to expose to the community what's going on and show what the consequences are for being out there in the cold without a house. And I think what they would like to do would be to establish what Freedom Sleepers have done to some extent, which is to create a kind of safe zone, not unfortunately out of the rain, because if you try to do that, the police and the rangers and the security thugs will move on you and force you to move, well, under threat of citation and arrest. And Freedom Sleepers have gotten better about this. When they're told to move, some of them have learned the law. They say, no, we don't have to move. We just can't be asleep. We can't be camping. And we can't be blocking the sidewalk. But otherwise, leave us alone. Get lost. And that is something that Pat Colby has been encouraging people to do, as has Abby Samuels, activists working with the Freedom Sleepers, or they're actually Freedom Sleepers themselves. Abby is out of town. And Pat lives in her vehicle with her brother. So in any case, it's also true that a lot of threatening is done by police that don't actually involve actual citations. Because citations provide a record, a documentary record, of the inhumanity of the police department and the other agencies that do these arrests and busts and hassles. And while it's true that most of us couldn't be bothered by this whole business, or alternately, we don't like it, but we don't know what to do about it. Creating a paper trail is not really something that necessarily the police want to do. First of all, it's burdensome for them. And secondly, it paints a bad picture of them. And finally, it makes them legally liable. That's what I think is the case in Santa Cruz, and I suspect it's also true in Denver. So what they do instead is they threaten you. They threaten to come back and take your stuff. They threaten to give you a ticket or arrest you. And they will be back in 5 minutes unless you're gone, you're going to be in trouble. And for many people, that's enough. They want to get out of there. But it's frequently a threat and not something that actually is carried out. And not because the police are particularly compassionate, I think. Although in some cases that may be true, but rather because a lot of police department power depends upon the threat rather than the carrying out of the threat. If people will respond simply to the threat, it's much more cost-effective, energy-effective, and kind of maintains the mythology of the power of the police department. So it's the threat. I mean, that's the reason you see people in uniform stalking around with guns and driving around in cars. It is the threat of being harassed, ticketed, or arrested that makes people follow the orders of the police, however illegitimate those orders may be. Continuing of this story in the Denver Post, property, the tents and blankets seized by police from homeless people in freezing weather, was seized as evidence, but Denver officials say they will return the belongings. Note they don't say when. Every step we take is intended to connect people with safe and warm places and critical supportive services. We never intended to take the belongings that people need to keep warm, Hancock said in the statement. Now, I'm not there, but given how authorities in most cities behave and the fact that they engage in these expeditions against the homeless when it is clear from all independent accounts and even from the city managers themselves that there is completely inadequate shelter for the majority of homeless people, as there is in Santa Cruz tonight. Nonetheless, in spite of this, they will claim that they are actually helping the homeless by what they're doing. And this is kind of cleverly phrased. Every step we take is intended to connect people with safe and warm places and critical supportive services. Well, what they will do is they will give out little cards that, I don't know what the Denver police are doing, but typically they'll give out, although they aren't even doing this in Santa Cruz anymore, they'll give out information about shelters that are full or lists that you can sign up on for future support or a place you can go to the next day if you're lucky, and if you get there before everyone else does, then you can get into you might get into a rather wretched shelter of one sort or another. But even if you consider the actual construction of the sentence, our intention is to connect people with safe and warm places. Well, the cities and counties and state government and the federal government have been spending millions upon millions of dollars for studies of what is to be done. And these can all be done with the intention of connecting people with safe and warm places. But, of course, while they're conducting these studies, people are freezing to death. And what they're really doing is they're paying middle-class workers and giving them jobs to engage in activities that don't really acknowledge the needs or provide for those needs of homeless folks outside. We never intended to take belongings that people need to keep warm. Well, I suspect that's a flat-out lie, according to that the mayor is quoted as saying in Denver. David Lane, a civil rights attorney, the story continues, said he called the Denver City Attorney's Office Friday to demand a policy change, adding to recent complaints from the American Civil Liberties Union. And that, I believe, was something that hasn't been done much recently at City Hall around the ACLU, though there were some good statements made by Peter Gelblum and Steve Plaich, about the proposed cameras that were voted in by the City Council on Tuesday night. Again, David Lane, the civil rights attorney, told them if they don't stand down, we'll be in federal court first thing Monday morning, said Lane, who is organizing a new association called the Lawyers Civil Rights Coalition. Amber Miller, a spokeswoman for the mayor, said the policy shift was not prompted by any particular event. And so they could be true, but my suspicion is that power pays attention to counterpower, and the threat of a lawsuit in the federal court where there's already been indications that federal authorities have been saying, and some federal courts have been saying, if you don't have adequate shelter, you cannot be arresting people for sheltering themselves. Meanwhile, Denver Homeless Out Loud vowed to fight on to end the enforcement of the camping ban and push for more housing, which it declared a human right. We should all know Mayor Hancock did not just decide this of his own goodwill, the organization wrote. This directive was made due to the legal and public pressure. Showing this is just plain wrong. And that, again, is a Denver Post story. Denver mayor orders police not to confiscate blankets and tents from the homeless. Closer to us, there's good news, which I'm picking up off the ACLU's website. That's the American Civil Liberties Union of Northern California. And this is a report. Civil rights groups sue Caltrans to stop illegal raids against California's homeless, and it's dated December 13th, Oakland. A lawsuit filed today by civil rights groups charges the California Department of Transportation, Caltran, with violating the constitutional rights of homeless people by confiscating and destroying their property in ongoing sweeps. This should be very familiar to homeless folks here in Santa Cruz, and even folks who aren't homeless. On multiple occasions, Caltrans has failed to give proper notice before raiding encampments, refusing plaintiffs an opportunity to move their belongings before destroying them in trash compactors. So notice the limited nature of this. This is how the attorneys on the homeless won in Fresno back in 2006-2007. They documented the destruction of homeless property where the actual people doing the destroying, the I don't know if it was Caltrans crews or city police, just didn't give those whose property they were taking an opportunity to move it or take a hold of it or do something else with it. And as a consequence, they were incidentally also violating state law. But the usual excuse for this is, oh, it's trash. And we actually have seen that locally in Santa Cruz. A website run by Brent Adams, Out of Sight, Out of Mind, showed a city employee picking up a perfectly good-looking bedroll and calling it trash until Brent Adams challenged him. We've talked about that. You can find that online under Out of Sight, Out of Mind. It's a gambit that is used to clear an area of the homeless presence. And you do that, I suppose, by cutting off their survival possibilities, except that you're dealing with human beings, not cockroaches or weeds. And that, of course, is that kind of distinction is something that is not understood, or at least is not acknowledged in practice by authorities that do this kind of thing. The Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights, the American Civil Liberties Union of Northern California, East Bay Community Law Center, and the law firm of Wilmer, Cutler, Pickering, Hale, and Doerr have filed suit and are seeking a permanent injunction to stop this illegal practice throughout California. According to the complaint, the individual plaintiffs have lost cherished and necessary items, including family heirlooms, irreplaceable photographs of loved ones, tents and sleeping bags, warm weather clothing, mechanics tools, food, camp stoves, bicycles, and personal documents. The raids are carried out by the Caltrans workers, sometimes with the assistance of the CHP, California Highway Patrol, using compactor trucks to confiscate tents and shopping carts full of personal belongings, crushing them on the spot, often with the owners watching and protesting. The complaint notes that these sweeps are in violation of the U.S. and California state constitutions, California statutory and common law, and Caltrans' own policies. I don't want to be homeless on the streets of Oakland forever, said plaintiff James Leone. Caltrans has been a major obstacle to getting my life together. Twice in 6 years, I've been left with only the clothes on my back. Twice, I've lost everything I own in the world. All people, including the homeless, have a right to the Fourth Amendment's protections against unreasonable seizure of property and the 14th Amendment's protections against the deprivation of property without due process of law, said Elisa Della Piana, legal director at the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights in the San Francisco Bay Area. As housing becomes more expensive and increasingly scarce in the Bay Area and around the state, we have seen our homeless populations increase in size and vulnerability, said Keith Slenkovich, a Wilmer Hale partner who filed the complaint today. That was four or five days ago now. Caltrans is violating homeless individuals' constitutional rights by improperly seizing their property. We are asking the court to stop these unlawful seizures to protect the rights of some of California's most vulnerable individuals. And I know this is being done under the forbidden H name, homeless. They aren't even forced to using the disabled category as a way of, sprucing up this whole thing so that it becomes more acceptable to those who whose homeless-a-phobia knows no bounds. And also, the disabled, I think, are an easier class to argue civil rights protection for because they they're established in law in some respects already by federal law, and I suspect by some state laws as well. I'm not sure about the state situation. But that was considered as an alternative by the ACLU as a way of fighting sleeping bans in different cities, was to consider it from the disability angle. However, this lawsuit doesn't sound like it is specifically claiming that only the disabled homeless have the right not to have their property destroyed, but every person out there whose property is threatened should not have it taken without legal cause, which means there has to be an arrest, there has to be a crime committed, and although it actually is being treated as a crime, homelessness is not a crime. It is a status and a condition which cannot be made a crime, but which we are only beginning to, through this fight, to establish the right for homeless folks to survive. Continuing with this story, a press release on the ACLU of Northern California website. The complaint notes that Caltrans has agreed in two prior cases to stop seizing and immediately destroying homeless people's property in 1992, which I was unaware of, and in 2006. That's the Fresno case, which I have talked about in the past on this station. And you've heard Mike Rhodes of Fresno talk about it, too. Caltrans settled similar cases and ceased conducting illegal searches for several years. As a result of litigation in 2006, Caltrans enacted a policy that requires that Caltrans properly post notice of impending sweeps, allow homeless individuals to remove their possessions before commencing a sweep, and collect and store any items of apparent value so they can be claimed by their owners after the sweep. Caltrans is now in violation of this policy. The class action suit was brought in Alameda County Superior Court. The suit requests a permanent injunction to stop Caltrans from continuing to violate the laws, as well as damages for people whose property has been illegally taken and destroyed in Oakland, Emeryville, and Berkeley. An estimated 4,040 of Alameda County's residents are homeless, according to a March 2016 report by the Alameda County Public Health Department in collaboration with the organization Everyone Home. The study found that the number of people becoming newly homeless has increased as the economic recovery has failed to improve incomes for most individuals and families. Vacancy rates have decreased, rents have increased significantly, and public resources to ensure adequate housing for all are diminishing. Client stories. Kimberly Sanchez is a longtime Oakland resident. She's been homeless in Oakland for 5 years. Sanchez has experienced so many Caltrans sweeps, she has lost count. On one occasion in May of 2016, Caltrans confiscated and destroyed her belongings, even though she was residing on city property. On that day, Sanchez lost an 18-karat gold necklace that had been a gift for Mother's Day, a Coleman stove, food and groceries, all her bedding and clothing, and a tent. Caltrans also took a manila folder full of claims Sanchez had collected from community members who also had had their belongings destroyed and threw it in the trash compactor. If you are not with your belongings when Caltrans comes, she says, they will throw everything away and destroy it. In the course of the time that I've been living on the street, I have had my belongings taken by Caltrans between 5 and 10 times. I have lost count. If I kept counting, it would drive me crazy. That's Kimberly Sanchez's story. And indeed, it ties right into what the practice is in Santa Cruz as well by city employees, whether it's Parks and Rec or police, as exemplified by this most recent video by Brent Adams on Out of Sight, Out of Mind. Because what it shows is the police and the rangers come around when people are not there and sees their property as abandoned or as trash. And this becomes the way of making them leave the area, or I suppose break into stores in order to get survival gear. That hasn't been happening much that I've heard of yet. Though it seemed to me to be a reasonable response if city authorities, backed by merchant taxes, are stealing your property. I don't know. It's so outrageous. It clouds one's conventional morality. One has to start thinking in terms of some kind of equal justice or restorative justice. Of course, what we want to see in Santa Cruz is to see this stop happening, and we want to see people left alone at the very least, and of course, provided with services if they want them. And that's a very important proviso, if they want them. Services that don't exist right now except for people who have a certain amount of money and who are able to put up with the extravagant rents we have here. Another story from this lawsuit against Caltrans. Christopher Craner is a landscaper by trade and was employed as a gardener by the Oakland Parks Department for 10 years. Craner has been homeless on the streets of Oakland since 2014 after starting a landscaping business in Stockton and then moving back to Oakland to be nearer to his children. In March of 2015, a Caltrans sweep left Craner with nothing but the clothes on his back. While Caltrans conducted the sweep, Craner went to help a friend move their tent and was threatened with arrest when he tried to return for his own property. He watched everything he owned be thrown into the crusher of a garbage truck. Among other items, Craner lost warm weather clothing, a set of tools he used for intermittent work repairing cars, precious family antiques, tents, sleeping bags, and camping gear. In the hopes that some of his belongings had survived the sweep, he called Caltrans repeatedly, to no avail. And Christopher has this to say, "I don't know anyone who has ever gotten their property back, not one person, and I know several people who have tried. They've never gotten even a phone call back. I've been trying to get off the streets. Having to deal with Caltrans has not made that easier." James Leon is a 56-year-old Bay Area native who moved to Oakland 29 years ago. He is a train mechanic who lost his job in the recession of 2008 when Leon couldn't find a new job after being laid off. He sold all his belongings to make ends meet and still ended up homeless. In April of 2016, Caltrans arrived at Leon's camp and told him he had 5 minutes to move his belongings. Within 3 minutes, Caltrans began throwing his property into a compaction garbage truck. Even though Leon's bicycle was not on Caltrans property, it was thrown into the compactor. When Leon pulled his bicycle out of the compactor, a Caltrans worker threatened him with a taser. That day, Leon lost a sleeping mat and bedding, all his clothing except what he was wearing, camping equipment, his Walkman, a family photo album, and personal phone book. Because his sister's phone number was in the phone book, he hasn't been able to contact her since. Although it looks like he stood up and saved his bike. What he says is, "I've made money helping people with their cars and doing odd jobs. I recycle and dumpster dive. I have dreams and aspirations for my life. I don't want to be homeless on the streets of Oakland forever. Caltrans has been a major obstacle to getting my life together. Twice in 6 years, I've been left with only the clothes on my back. Twice, I've lost everything I own in the world." And finally, Patricia Moore graduated from the University of Alabama with a BA in physical therapy and originally became homeless when a shoulder injury prevented her from continuing to work as a physical therapist. In 2013, Moore was hit by a car while riding her bicycle and now uses a cane and a walker to help with mobility. Caltrans has taken and destroyed her belongings on at least 5 separate occasions. On April 29, 2016, Moore was packing up her bags in anticipation of a Caltrans sweep when Caltrans workers arrived an hour earlier than indicated by their posted notice and immediately began confiscating her property. They threw her tent into a compactor, took her bicycle, and almost threw away her walker before a friend of Moore's intervened. One of the workers, she says, looked at me and said, "I'm going to take everything that you have." They would start at one end of the line of tents along the sidewalk and work their way down, throwing belongings into the trucks. They always came with a compactor garbage truck. And that's a story on the ACLU website, quoting 4 different clients, Kimberly Sanchez, Christopher Craner, James Leone, and Patricia Moore, whose property has reportedly been stolen by the authorities and destroyed. And the story is entitled, "Civil Rights Groups Sue Caltrans to Stop Illegal Raids Against California's Homeless." And I believe that we shall know by next Monday, the 19th, whether they're going to federal court on this or not. And this is the kind of lawsuit that can have implications all over the state and perhaps all over numerous states. And it's what we need here and what we've needed here for a long time. Huff is prepared to do this on a couple of occasions, but never followed through. And the same is true with Steve Plaich's Homeless Legal Assistance Project. On several occasions, he's told us he's had an attorney come down here, and then we've heard different reasons or excuses, such as the fact that, the claim that it was the homeless people wouldn't come forward or weren't stable enough, or perhaps the attorney was not around as much as she should be. And for the last year, we've been hearing reassurances that all these things are being prepared. But most recently, the word at the Huff meeting, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group I work with, meets every Wednesday at the Sub Rosa Cafe, that the attorney firm that had been involved in this was simply not getting enough primary information from Santa Cruz, and that would be Steve Plaich. And so they backed off. I don't know. Again, I haven't confirmed this with Steve, and I probably should. I know I should. I'll give you more information, listeners, when I come back, perhaps on Sunday or perhaps next week. But those are the claims made at the Huff meeting by a colleague of one of the Freedom Sleepers who's been sort of researching the issue. So hopefully even without compiling data in this area and actually using it to secure attorneys that we were assured again and again were working on the situation, but apparently haven't been and the data hasn't been sent to them, this will still, this kind of lawsuit that's going on against Caltrans up in the Bay Area will have a ripple effect on us. Another issue that's come up and that I've been talking about on Free Radio here is the issue of police violence and the deaths of Sean Arlt and Luke Smith, who were killed by the Santa Cruz police and the sheriff's deputies, respectively. It would seem unnecessarily. And we aren't getting full information on either of them, the video and the audio and the name of the killing officer in the case of Sean Arlt from the Santa Cruz Police Department. And in the case of Luke Smith, some video. But with 11 deputies around getting a few cuts of video, although admittedly there's 11 to 15 minutes of it, doesn't really give us all the information we need. And then the real issue for some of us is to prosecute the police officer who did the shooting. Because that seems to me, that's really the only way you're going to actually get real change, is if police officers who do this and police chiefs who allow this to happen or dictate that it happen by insisting on lethal firing and keying their forces up to a sort of a military mentality, follow orders or get shot, they have to pay the price. If they don't, it's a freebie. And there's no reason why it can't happen again and again and again, as it does all across the country. So we're going to be protesting this, as we did last Saturday, this next Saturday, on the 17th, town clock, 1:30. Come on down. Here's a little audio from some folks who gathered under the awning of the post office in the rain where we were serving a little food and talking about police issues, the kinds of changes we need to make. And also homeless folks were telling their stories about what had happened to them. And these are stories that you don't usually get to hear. You have to judge the credibility of these stories yourself. And no doubt you will.
Here at the Community Control of Police, our end police brutality rally in front of the post office, rained out at the clock, talking with
Dave.
And you have a report about something that happened to you, a rather fearsome nature.
Oh, yeah. I got a shot with a BB gun in my sleep.
How long ago was it?
About a couple weeks ago.
And where did this happen?
Where I was sleeping under a bridge. I won't say where,
no
but...
No problem. And were you alone or in company?
I was with one of the person.
And who was the person? Did you see the person who, or persons who accosted you?
No, but the next morning I heard people at the clinic I go to talking about a group of people in the neighborhood that were running around tormenting, you know, homeless people while they're
target
just
target practice.
Yeah, BB guns, paintballs, stuff like that.
And
encouraged by their parents, I heard. Yeah.
Even the birds are joining us. And were you injured?
No. It reflected off a wall and hit me in the armpit. So, I mean, it wasn't...
How about the person you were with? Was that you, by any chance?
No. Another guy that sleeps within 100 yards from us, I talked to him the next morning, and he said he saw the guys that were shooting the BB gun, and he, you know, he cussed them out, and he told them they, you know, should stay away from our area and not be shooting a gun in the middle of the night.
The same area as our associate. Same area.
Yeah, and I have a brother that accidentally got shot in the eye by a BB years ago, and he lost his eye. He can't see out of one eye. He has a fake eye for the rest of his life. So, you know, so I'm particularly sensitive about this kind of thing, and, you know, we need to maybe put up some little posters or something saying, you know,
informed defensive groups.
Yeah, we don't need any guns, and they're
on the hunt.
Yeah, telling that too.
And we've been talking with
Mark Brody.
Thank you, Mark. And
Dave.
Thanks, Dave. Should be on Free Radio tomorrow morning.
Got Amazon. I bought a taser, a regular handheld stun gun off of Amazon before this happened. And at random, I was searched, I guess just because I'm on probation, so they have the right to search me. And they found the stun gun, and I was arrested. And I was under the influence that I only couldn't have one if it's the kind that shoots out, but it's a handheld stun gun for my defense.
Would you like cream and sugar in your coffee? A little cream. Okay.
I would have been safer that night if I had that, you know.
You would have been safer with a taser, yeah.
and
Steve Argus speaking.
And there was no reason for them to actually turn an attack dog on him, but that supposedly is their excuse for shooting him dead with an AR-15. And so we're calling for, or the deputy that did that, his name is Vigil.
And what Steve Argue here is talking about is the killing of Luke Smith by Deputy Vigil in Corralitos. After Smith was sort of confronted with 11 deputies, he had a 4-inch knife in his hand, and he was a police dog had been loosed on him in the middle of the night. He apparently was under the influence of LSD, not the dog, but the victim, the man. And he was shot dead in a distance by a rifleman. So the idea that there was somehow some necessity to kill him by any of the officers who were close by is strains credulity to use an... It's hard to believe. Let's hear some more from Steve Argue. This self-defense claim, this officer's safety to claim, is a frequent one used by the police. Again, I'm talking about police generally across the country, but in this particular case, you can see specifically, and actually parts of the video have been released, the video footage. You can find it online. If you look up Sentinel Luke Smith, you can find it there, and it's quite shocking.
For him to be prosecuted for murder. And then the other guy who was shot in Santa Cruz County was shot by the Santa Cruz police, and he was shot. There supposedly is video and audio of this, the police chief was saying, but they haven't released any of it to the public, and that's very suspicious because it probably doesn't back up their version of the story, and that's the reason why they're not releasing it. What they're saying is he was swinging a rake and he was a threat to the four officers on the scene.
It was an iron rake, they say.
But who knows? Yeah, we don't even know if he had a rake. You know, all we have is their word, and as long as they don't release the audio and video, we don't know anything. Right. And so we're demanding that audio and video be released.
And I think you wanted to say something, or
come on down. Saturday is 1:30. Generally, we'll be at the clock tower, and we'll keep protesting till we get justice.
Yeah. And I'm also concerned with the homeless harassment by cops, busting camps, giving citations when there's no legal place for people to go, arrests for survival behavior like sleeping, protective gear against the rain, sitting down next to a building under the eaves where people are being driven away, if not ticketed. So that's another focus that we have, I have anyway. Steve is also involved in this, and actually he's leading this.
With this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm interested in pushing for all kinds of changes in the police department. Some people want to see the abolition of the police department. I understand that as well.
I want an abolition of the police state.
And, of course, there's the abolition of the police state, which is high on Trump's list, I'm sure. And so things are not likely to get better around here.
It wouldn't have been any better with Hillary Clinton, who put 100,000, or whose husband put 100,000 new cops on the street.
True.
And was a big architect of the police state.
And the issue here is to dismantle the police state in Santa Cruz. That's what we're trying to do. However daunting a task it seems like it's going to be.
Yeah.
Anybody want to, you want to say more you want to say, Steve?
No. Keep coming back. I think we need a revolution. We need to get rid of Number two, we need to get rid of a, we got to get rid of a system where the police are there to keep the majority of us down, to oppress the majority of us on behalf of the wealthy who really run this country. In the meantime, we're out here, I mean, that's kind of a long-term goal of mine and my group, the Revolutionary Tendency. But in the meantime, we're also out here with these immediate demands on the police department and the sheriff's department here. And really, on all these things, we have to point the finger at the mayor and city council. At them, because they're the boss of the police department. They're in charge of them. So when these things happen and the police aren't brought back on a shorter leash or anything like that, it's their fault too. So as much as they want to walk around pretending they're all progressive and all these things, they aren't, because it's their police, and often their police under their orders that are out harassing homeless people and doing all these things in the streets. And it's the same thing with the sheriff's department, which is controlled by and park rangers. A lot of this is under the control of the local county government as well. So we need to hold them responsible. When they pretend to be progressive and on the side of the people, all progressive on all kinds of issues around the world, we got to bring it back here and say, yeah, what about these police that are getting away with murder, shooting people down in the street?
Well, they are addressing the police violence, because those poor officers that kill people, they have such a hard time that they give paid leave vacations to the South Pacific and Paris. No, they do. That's how they handle it.
And if people are interested, there this Tuesday, day after the day after tomorrow, it's the last city council meeting of the year, which usually is a complete waste of time, but in the evening, they're going to be having the new council members seated. And the new council members are also pretty much a waste of time. However, afterwards, they go across the street to the Civic Auditorium, and the public has a right to come in and talk to the whole old city council and the new city council. And, of course, they don't listen much, but it's an opportunity to get some coffee, usually. And they usually have some spread there, some food. That's at the Civic Auditorium around 8 or 8:30 Tuesday. If you want to, yes?
And that actually, it did happen, although there was, I think, cupcakes and ice cream and coffee and tea there. And a few homeless folks did show up. It was downplayed by the mayor. Normally this get together after the new council members who are elected in November get seated and officially sworn in. This is usually an occasion when the community is invited to join everybody in the Civic Auditorium. And it's actually written on the agenda of that city council meeting every second and fourth Tuesday, although in December it's only the second. There is a council meeting. And in this particular agenda did not have that written on it at all. And I had to contact the staff to find out that it was happening. And one staff member who said she was rather concerned that this was not, that this person was directed by the mayor to leave it off the agenda. And to me, this seems, you might say I'm being kind of picky here about this, but not really. I have been a longtime observer of the Santa Cruz City Council and concerned with their violations of the Public Meetings Act. And the Public Meetings Act is what allows us to speak at the city council meetings even if they don't want us to, or to attend the city council meetings if they'd rather close them off and hold them in private places. You know, and also to be informed fully of what's on the agenda 72 hours before it happens. And it also requires, if council members are getting together in any number, I think it's either greater than 3 or greater than 2. In any case, I think all 7 council members were there, or at least a number of them were, more than 3, at this Civic Auditorium cupcake and ice cream chit-chat. they're required to let the public know what's happening, to put it on the agenda. Otherwise, they're violating the law. And the point here is that, you know, it's not, there aren't severe penalties for violating this law. I think the best you can get that I've heard is get them to redo an item if they didn't do it properly, to redo all the items that they should have invited the public for. So maybe we can get them to redo the cupcakes and ice cream. But it just shows how oblivious and unresponsive and indifferent the outgoing Mayor Matthews is on this issue. Although I understand I was promised by outgoing Councilmember Posner that he would be announcing this event on the air so people could be aware of it in the televised comments that were made by city council members. I don't know if he did. But all this happened while Freedom Sleep Out 75 was happening outside. Again, a smaller number than in the past, partially, I would imagine, because of the opening up of both the warming center that night with rain coming in, and also the Association of Faith Communities overseeing the winter shelter, which is happening, and you can get to it if you want to show up at 4 o'clock out by the tannery. I understand it's you have to go back and forth between the homeless lack of services center on Coral Street and this pickup point, which is about a block past the tannery as you head up Highway 9. Not the best situation for disabled people, and there's no transportation to that spot for disabled people, though I understand that once they're there, they will get transported to one of the two church locations that people are not being allowed to go directly to. After all, they're homeless and might frighten the horses and the neighbors, but they can if they go through this bureaucratic process of getting transported by the city authorities, or in this case by the charity group that's acting on behalf of the city and getting $300,000 to do it. I'm going to break off from this particular discussion, which I guess nauseates me more than usual, and give you a little music to, break up the show a bit.
Where the landlords are Wall Street, oil companies, they want you to be quiet.
And that's the PG&E song, or Write the Check and Shut Up, by Carol Denny. You're tuned to the stream of freakradio.org, or Free Radio Santa Cruz, actually. Freakradio.org is where we're at, as you probably can see if you just look at your computer. You can help us get back on the air if you see anything that might pass as a place to put up a transmitter antenna. I mean, it has to be, adjacent to, maybe hooked onto a second story of a house or a tree, and a little place for the small shack at the base of the antenna where we can put in the equipment and run power to it and internet. And we'll pay for it too, I think. We will pay you for it. We also may be offering a reward for the person who finds a location. So, stay tuned on that one.
Tuesday. If you want to, yes?
I didn't keep up really much with the results of the election.
And the election itself, the mayor, unfortunately, was reelected. That's Matthews. Although she won't be the mayor, she'll be a council member. They rotate the mayor.
So I'm here to meet supervisor of these rangers. I just have 2 minutes on that.
Say again?
I got you. 2 minutes of that. Jonathan Work, longtime local resident. Family's been here since 1940. Cynthia Matthews, recently reelected to the city council, has one son, Jeremy Matthews, currently a supervisor of the downtown Santa Cruz Park Rangers. When I'm 10 years old, we opened the mission up there, living in the neighborhood. They're not downtown, they're not patrolling, they're opening the mission. My best friend and I are going in there, digging up old pieces of glass, like 100 years ago, et cetera. Now, Jeremy Matthews, curiously, about 6 years ago, has a contender in a place called Sub Rosa. He invents a Facebook page called Sub Rosa, Santa Cruz doesn't want you here, get out. And curiously, Cynthia Matthews is reelected as mayor of Santa Cruz, and her son remains as the supervisor of the downtown. Okay, one more minute, I'm sorry. This goes back to a city council meeting, I think about November 2015. Chief of Police Vogel, with Assistant Chief Martinez, present a PowerPoint presentation to the city council. I'm going fast again, I'm sorry. And in showing, okay, first off, these are the crime stats, federal crime stats for Santa Cruz. They put out the misnomer from the FBI. These aren't universal, just because it's a little lower here than there, don't, you know, assume anything. However, Chief Vogel goes into a soliloquy about, well, this is how many officers they have in Campbell and Santa Clara, and this is how many tickets, citations, i.e. revenue-generating homeless tickets, for them. And this is Santa Cruz. For Santa Cruz, only X amount of officers, and we give out X amount of citations and et cetera, whatnot. So what follows is a request by Chief Police Vogel to bring back the community service officers about a year ago. So I'm out of the state for about 6 months. I come back, I kneel see rangers walking the streets downtown. Park rangers walking the streets. So that's it, right? Oh, and Martinez gets my particular ire by quoting Sally Field. The first movie that Sally Field was in, where she holds up a sign in the textile factory to get the union going. Martinez has the chutzpah to get up and say, "I feel like Sally Field here holding up my sign for this minute," as in he's so beleaguered and stressed out comparing herself to terrorized textile workers. Okay, thank you.
John, have we been listening to
Jonathan Work? Family's been in Santa Cruz since 1940.
Thanks, Jonathan. Steve?
You good?
What? Oh, there he is.
Well, I mean, anybody else want to say anything? I mean, you actually all said something. This will be on free radio tomorrow morning. So, anybody want more coffee? We got coffee to burn here.
That station is FM.
It was 101.3 FM, but we are without a transmitter site right now, so you have to get us on the internet or on an archive later. I'll give you a card. You can maybe someday access it if you want.
Yeah, there's a little doubt that there's some kind of big change that's going to be coming.
And there will be a continuing protest demanding the release of the records and the prosecution of the guilty in the killings of Sean Arlt and Luke Smith this coming Saturday, December 17th at 1:30 at the town clock. In the unlikely event that it rains, again, it will probably be under the eaves of the post office. And now here's some voices from the Red Church from Monday, December 12th. Red Church is a meal, of course, that folks have once a week at the Calvary Episcopal Church across from the Farmers Market area. 6 to 7, check it out if you're hungry or just want to mingle. There's also a thing called Penny University that goes on next door, which involves notables invited by Paul Lee and Ed Fry to speak to a group of about 10 or 15 people, and any member of the public is welcome to come there, though these folks are more into talking than doing, as most of us are.
Here at the Red Church, it's about 10 after 6. So it looks like a lean crowd, maybe because of the opening of the shelter. Warming center open tonight, do you know?
Call 211.
I don't know. No phone, actually. But yeah, it looks like a short line. I'm counting 10, 20, 30, 60 or 70 people. At most.
And,
hey, and what are you up to, big girl?
Hello, sweetheart. I want my teddy bear. Give me my teddy bear.
Now, what's the story? What are you up to?
Hello, Chief. I just been diagnosed after going to stage 2 breast cancer.
You are a cancer patient. In recovery?
I had surgery, radiation.
We're talking with?
Red.
Implement red.
80 below red.
Indoors or outdoors red?
And the back of a borrowed car now.
How's that treating you?
My engine blew up on my RV. Yeah, my car face is shut.
Where are you located? Are you like in Santa Cruz, Gilroy, Washington?
Wherever there's not a beeping God can find us.
Is Crow hanging out here?
Yeah. I just got re-diagnosed and came back. And I'm starting to see the cancer doctors again. This is my fourth battle. Four times.
My God. How does it feel?
The doctor has to put the needles in me again, and I hate needles. He's got the fuck out of me. Pouring metal objects in the arm. And if I want to live, hey, I'm not done. Well, I'm sick. And God's not done with me, so I'm still here.
Right on, babe.
Yeah, my best friend, and I'm 10 days older with him, died on a Halloween morning. And she's my kid's godmother. And I'm 10 days older, and she died of cancer. And I'm dating my fourth time.
You're hanging in there, girl.
Yeah. So, God's not known yet, man.
Yeah, I'm right. We've been talking with
Red 80 Belug.
So I'm here at the
trying to give you an update on
the piano door.
Really,
the guard keeps coming over here and closing the door every time it gets open. But you, Mike, musical Mike, you have a new list here of the Santa Cruz Free Guide. Has it been expanded? I see it's dated December 6th. Is that right?
I think it's an 8th. Yeah.
Number 8. Thank you. A little nearsighted myself. What have you noticed that's new in this sheet here?
It looks like the more pertinent things have been brought to the top, like the shelter schedules.
Winter shelter, warming center, River Street shelter.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You mentioned you can just call up and get a fucking, supposedly an exemption from the camping ordinance.
Well, and one thing wasn't mentioned, there's a hotline 211 for non-emergency information, including food pantries and or shelter information.
Have you actually tried that one?
I've heard it can be a little bit, you know, like involved, and yet, you know, that's something. It's still something.
Wait a minute. You does that mean you've tried it or you haven't? Define what's new.
Well, I'm still a happy camper, but if I needed to, I might. It does have a regular phone number here.
The answer is no. You haven't dialed 211, correct?
Yeah, you know, I might have tried it once for the food pantry. I got some food pantry information.
How long ago was that?
Maybe a month ago.
Okay, well, when you do it again, let me... Actually, I should probably try it.
A monthly update, yeah.
So, do you have an extra copy of this thing?
Oh, always, yeah. I get a handful every week.
Okay, well, I will take this new Santa Cruz free guide
And I believe it's online. That's something that actually does provide, although I have not checked it recently, but when I saw it, it began about a year and a half ago. Merity, who now does a meal with Sea Otter, I believe it's every Wednesday at the Depot Park in the afternoon. But if you want more information about this that's accurate and clear, go online to Santa Cruz Free Guide, and I believe that is where you can find that information. And if it's not there, call me at 423-4833, and I will try to set you in the right direction. Another place to check is the Food Not Bombs meals, which happen three times a week, Saturday and Sunday at 4 o'clock, 4 to 6, outside the main post office on the corner there, and also at the Freedom Sleepers in front of City Hall on Tuesday evenings. Usually there's food there either from Food Not Bombs or Joe Schultz, and information about Santa Cruz Free Services, the diminishing number though they may be.
Stuff it in my pocket, probably never to look at it again, but you never can tell.
I think they've got more. Let me check. Hey,
thank you, Mike. It's kind of hard to hear anything you're saying anyway. So you're regularly on the winter shelter monitoring intake, and how's intake going?
Well, we seem to have a good group. I do Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays. It's running smoothly. We're maxed out, at least in this site, the 56 people to VFW. We're just waiting for Salvation to come online in January, another 50 beds.
And that, of course, was Steve Plaich, who's a monitor there, as well as a bagel server at the meal that I'm standing at in this audio, as well as the vice chair of the ACLU and the director, one of the board of directors, or the president of the board of directors of MHCAN, spread all over the place and sometimes, I think, spread too thin.
So, this is a very quick announcement, folks. It's not a lot new, but there is something happening tomorrow night. There's the usual sleep out, number 75, in front of the City Hall. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's the sidewalk sleep out. If you can't get into the winter shelter or you can't get into the warming center, I don't know, is the warming center open tomorrow night, or does anybody know? It's supposed to be raining like hell tomorrow, but we'll see. There is also, tomorrow is when the City Council changes its membership. You get a supposedly new mayor. It's actually not much of a new thing. But after the City Council, around 8 o'clock, they have a reception in the Civic Auditorium, which involves food and drink. And also, you can chat with your favorite City Council member, if you want, right? And that's at the Civic Auditorium around 8 or 8:30, after all these clowns make their speeches to the community. They do that at the City Council starting at 7. So if you're interested in that, check it out. Because it's a way to get in out of the rain anyway, 8:30 or so. 8:30 tomorrow. It's tomorrow, Tuesday night. Last City Council meeting of the year, and they move it across the street. First it's in the City Hall, and then at 8:30 they go to the Civic Auditorium, which is right across the street from the City Hall. So, where there is food, where there is drink, where they're supposedly mingling with the public. You're the public as well, believe it or not. And they have an obligation to mingle with you, too. However, they have not put it on the agenda tonight, unlike in all other years when they've had this. I think Mayor Matthews doesn't really want to see you there. But I think You have a right to be there. The food is there. And Micah Posner, who's going out, invites you to come. He is a council member who's leaving. Yes. Oh, well, then show up. Yeah, for sure. So anyway, tomorrow night, get out of the rain, get a bite to eat, 8:30 or so. Then you can go sleep out if you want with the sleepers or not, as you wish. Admittedly, you'll probably miss the shelter program if you do that, but it's something you can do. Also, there is another one of those HUF meetings. That's a group I work with, Homeless United. It's every Wednesday, 11 o'clock, Sub Rosa. No food, but coffee. 11 o'clock, Sub Rosa, next to the bike church. Say again. Which woman? I do not know. Cannot tell you, man. And if anybody, by the way, wants a flyer about how you can avoid camping tickets by getting on the waiting list, I'm going to leave some copies of it next to the bagel man. So check it out if you want to get a copy. Just call a phone number, and you have to keep calling in every 3 days to stay on a list. And if they ticket you for camping, the ticket supposedly gets eliminated. And we'll see about that. That's it. All right. Yes, ma'am.
It was horrible.
Then won't you tell me about the good old days? You know, sometimes it feels like it's old.
So we're talking with
Long hauler.
And how long you been in town?
Well, I've been in town for over a month, about a month and a week, maybe a month and a half.
And where are you from?
Well, originally from Santa Barbara, but then I've been traveling from Santa Barbara and went as far as southern Seattle, Washington.
Traveling alone or in company?
With company.
And what do you make of Santa Cruz for the last month?
Well, I've heard some pretty weird stories, like vigilante groups called Take Back Santa Cruz, and also there's good things about Santa Cruz, like there's a lot of food, and there is still a great deal of compassion here, even though the city and the county itself sanctions the kinds of, you know, abuses like persecuting you know, the street poor, and you know, taking punitive action against them. That's, you know, not right at all.
Have you had any such action taken against you or anybody you know recently?
Well, I haven't been here long enough for that to happen, and I've been, what I do is I just I break camp in the morning and just take off with what belongs to us, and you know, there's no presence of us left there, so, you know, we don't staff things, and we don't squat. We just, you know.
How many are you in your group?
Oh, it's just me, my partner David, and his brother Michael. We're the only ones in our group. We travel together, and, you know, sometimes Michael's away in another area, Monterey, and other times he's with us.
What's the most striking thing that you've noticed in the last week here in Santa Cruz?
Well, I noticed that there's what seems like a lot of really stressed out people, and some with some form of mental illness or mental disorder or just emotional issues. And
among people who are poor, among ordinary people who are well-to-do.
Well, mostly I've seen that amongst the impoverished. You know, and there's also people with, I guess, dual diagnosis with some form of mental disorder and maybe an addiction or something. And I've seen someone who was just talking unintelligible nonsense out of nowhere. And I don't know if he was taking a substance that is referred to as bath salts. Not that it's really bath salts. It's some sort of chemical combination. I don't know what it is, but... yeah, but Santa Cruz is interesting.
And we've been talking with
Long Hauler.
Anything you want to add, Long Hauler?
I would like to add that I really like this little place here, the Red Church. There's a lot of compassion and kindness.
Once a week, yeah.
Yeah, once a week. And there's, yeah. There is plenty of kindfulness around Santa Cruz. I mean, people are mindful of things that are happening around town. And also, they're very kind. So there's that. There's still good things about the area. It's not all bad.
Thank you. Long Hauler?
Yes.
All right. You should be on free radio Thursday evening.
Yeah, I had a migraine today, and I was chased around by rangers. Made me move 5 times today in the middle of my headache when I was laying in places where, I mean, I went way out of my way to get out of the way.
Where was this?
God,
if you remember.
Yeah, in several different places.
In a park?
In a park, you know, where I wasn't covered. And they just would not let me lay down.
Same cops, same rangers?
Same, well, all different rangers. Some of them are nicer to me than others. When I tell them I got a headache, I really do. And, you know, it was really frustrating today, but my headache is over with. And I really yelled at them, and I always go back and apologize because, boy, am I a grump. And I'm so sorry about that.
Yeah, yeah, sorry. You should be sorry. I don't know about that.
Well, God, I feel I do so much undercover work, it's like I'm an anti-hero, you know.
Well, they're the anti-homeless, so you can be the anti-hero.
Well, I know they're under orders. It's not them personally. I know this. So that can keep me in a place where, you know, if they're not in uniform, you know, I'll have a cigarette with them. I don't drink.
That's okay. Thank you, Game Catcher. Did you want to say anything for free radio?
Yeah.
Talking with?
Sunny.
Hey, Sunny, I remember.
Yeah.
You mentioned.
Yeah. A few nights ago, I had spoke out words so derogatory that I called a lot of people out of pocket. And it seems to take affection in hurting feelings in either good and bad. But with apologies, man, it hurts me as well when families and friends get hurt and people...
So what actually happened?
A female had came up to me and said that she had gotten raped a couple of
homeless
hours ago.
Person or?
Homeless person. And
raped by another homeless person or by some house person? Did she know?
I have no idea. She was just raped. And I couldn't believe that most people hear this stuff, and knowing that word's out and eyes are on us as well too. And we don't get no help out there, you know. They'd rather complain on us for sitting on a curb or standing in front of McDonald's or even getting sleep as well. That is much more of a crime than a person getting raped or getting hurt. And I spoke out of my pocket, and I called, you know, those who are just being blind and do not want to say anything or not help a person out here.
Who did you speak out to?
To the public, to the city of Santa Cruz.
You can do it tomorrow night, too. Actually, tomorrow, I think it's tomorrow, 5 o'clock at the city hall. They have oral communications if you want to do that. I didn't mention that inside when I spoke, but that's another option people have.
You know,
And, of course, that was Monday the 12th that these conversations are happening from, and Tuesday the next day, which is now several days ago, was when the City Council had its last meeting of the year. So next chance to get to talk to the City Council if you can't find them around town, which can be hard to do. But you can call them if you want to call them at 420-5020. They are supposed to pay attention to their messages. I'll actually I suppose there's no real obligation that they have to pay any attention to their messages, and many of them don't, at least in terms of what I've found. Though, frankly, I haven't been spending too much time trying to reach city council members. It's more the community I think we need to reach.
There are people out here. Yeah, I don't see any color out here. I see family out here. We all need help. And, you know, when being ignorant about that myself, it hurts. So I must follow my own actions as well, then helping another person out.
And we've been talking with
Sunny.
Anything you want to finish with?
Yes, peace be with you, and I apologize to all those who I've hurt and offended.
We will hope that those who offended against you will apologize to you.
Yes.
Thank you, man.
And that's one of my favorites, Ready for Christmas, by Carol Denny from her album, The Cruel Lullaby. You're tuned to the stream of Free Radio Santa Cruz at freakradio.org. My name is Robert Norris. This is Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides, a recorded show. I should have been saying this more throughout the recording, but don't call in directly to the studio if you've got comments you want to make, or either to me personally about stuff you've heard on the show or to the community generally. Call 423-HUFF, 423-4833, 423-HUFF, and I'll get back to you. I'm a bit out of combat at the moment, so I'm doing a recorded show, but hopefully that won't stop you from listening and from commenting. 423-4833. Now, I promised that you would be able to hear two mics from Berkeley, Mike Zint and Mike Lee. Going to start with Mike Lee. We aren't going to have time for Mike Zint in this show, but I will hopefully be playing him on Sunday when I'll be coming back for a longer show at 9:30 in the morning. I'll be on Sunday the 18th. So let's hear a little bit from Berkeley, and this is in the midst of the first they came for the homeless encampment up there that I visited last weekend, and actually it wasn't even last weekend. It was Tuesday, a couple days ago. So Mike Lee has some very interesting things to say, and I thought them worth passing on to you.
Here at, what are we calling ourselves, Operation Sleeping Bag, or are we calling ourselves First Aid Camp for the Homeless?
By the Hub Poor People's Tour.
Poor People's Tour. And I'm talking with...
Mike Lee, I'm one of the participants within First Aid Camp for the Homeless.
As well as a former city council or mayoral candidate.
That's correct.
And any comments on the election campaign that was?
I think... The community has to be really pleased. I mean, we have the real possibility of having, the ability to actually move forward and actually, start to solve some problems. It just remains to be seen how quickly they do. I'm hoping they take the inspiration of Aaron Peskin when he got onto the Board of Supervisors from day one. He hit the ground running with Campos and Perro and other people off the Board of Supervisors. So it remains to be seen whether or not they take that inspiration and apply it here to Berkeley.
That's the Alameda County Board of Supervisors?
No, they're San Francisco Board of Supervisors, Aaron Peskin.
And I know that First They Came for the Homeless, or I should say the Poor Tour, was busted, take care, JC, several days after they came into office in spite of promises they wouldn't be. What's that about?
No, actually, we had initiated it on October the 1st, 2016. So we've been on tour now. This is December, mid-December, so we've been actually on tour for...
I know, but you were driven away from the City Hall area.
I'm not quite sure what you mean by driven away by the
City
Hall.
Well, in other words, there was police confiscating tents, harassing people, seizing property.
That had nothing to do with us. We initiated this tour on October 1st, 2016.
So... am I wrong in thinking this is not the same encampment that I visited at near City Hall about 2 weeks ago that was also characterized itself as a poor tour?
Right, no, that is correct. But we initiated this tour down the street at Fairview and Adeline on October 1st. And,
I have these pair of pants. I hope someone can use them. They're very good for
me. Yeah, absolutely.
Can I leave them here with you guys?
Thank you so much.
All right.
Thank you.
Enjoy.
So, as part of this tour, this is our 12th location on this tour, and we were at City Hall for 2 to 3 weeks, sort of thing. So
I'm not saying that, I'm not commenting on the tour aspect of it, which I find a commendable strategy, but the promises of the new council members to rein in police harassment were broken, were they not, by police attacks on the Poor Tour shortly after they were elected?
Well, I'm not going to characterize it as broken promises. What I am going to characterize it as a mean-spirited carryover from the old regime. Unfortunately, they, at that particular raid around City Hall, it came in what I would call a power vacuum, a transition period between the old and the new regime. The old regime is not very happy because what we've seen in this last election is basically our people's coup d'etat. People in Berkeley said, we've had enough. We've had enough of homelessness, of increased crime rate, of housing we can't afford, sidewalks that don't get fixed, and all of these problems which the old regime refused to address. So I would characterize those raids that have happened to us since the election and the inaugural as a carryover by the mean-spirited regime led by Bates and Capitelli.
But didn't these raids come after the new council members were seated or not? They were before.
Well, no, the raids around City Hall happened after the inaugural, but tonight's meeting is the first formal meeting where they actually take power. Up until this point, they've been very effective. The city manager's been listening to the old regime, the old oligarchy, which really hates homeless people. And unfortunately, we still have three of those people on the city council, and my message to them, who I work with on an irregular basis, is that there's a new sheriff in town, and that sheriff is called Community Power.
And that's, of course, a nine-person city council.
It sits at eight right now because District 4, Jesse Arrigan's seat is open until March.
The new mayor.
Right. So that seat will be open until March 7th.
So in Santa Cruz, it's the staff, the cops, the rangers, the highly paid heads of the departments that really run the city. The city council alternates in and out, fluffs and puffs, and does elections and warms chairs. But they usually ratify what the staff wants them to do rather than vice versa. But it sounds like, Mike, you're saying that here it's different. The city council can call the shots. I thought that I understood from talking to others that that was not the case. What's the story?
Well, basically, we have a form of government here that's a city manager-mayoral partnership where the city manager is the one that's actually making decisions.
It's still the same city manager.
Right. And what we have here is what we had was in the city council that would just rubber stamp anything the city manager wanted to do, including declaring war on homeless people. We have a new direction now. We have a new city council. So my message to the city manager is that pay attention to what's going on. This is about community. Community starting to wake up and truly understand the dynamics of how decisions are being made. And quite frankly, the people that I talk to are quite offended by the fact of the matter, the amount of money being spent to chase homeless people, and the fact of the matter that you just don't pick on weaker people. And these are some very conservative people out of North Berkeley that I've recently talked to.
Well, other than, let's say, under the mayorship of Gus Newport decades ago, have you ever known an instance where a change in city council membership resulted in a change of city manager policy?
I believe it can happen.
But it has not, as far as you know.
It's not as happened as I know.
I agree. History does not have to be, we don't have to follow what history has given us in the past. But on the other hand, it's a cautionary lesson.
Well, the thing of it is a cautionary lesson, but the thing of it is that the community now controls city council, but the community, as overall throughout the city, has to understand that it is the one that wields the power, that it sets the tone and direction. Here in South Berkeley, we truly understand that. And we have an agenda, and we are going to make sure that agenda gets put under the table.
Well, as you know, historically, it's been rare to me when the community is in different places in the world has actually taken power. And that involves, you know, flooding into the chambers, stopping the council meetings. You know, happens during the Russian Revolution, the French Revolution, other times perhaps in different places. But I don't think it happened in the American Revolution, for example. It was a bunch of, you know, periwigged slaveholder, old white guys who took power and primarily did the revolution to protect the southern slaveholders and the northern merchants who were the slave traders. That's perhaps a somewhat cynical view. There were other things too. But I guess I'm wondering how much community power is there simply if you're placing so much confidence in these new city council members?
I'm not placing any confidence in the new city council people. That's not what I'm saying at all. I don't place confidence, never have, in professional politicians. And at the end of the day, that's what they are. My confidence comes from the fact of the matter that I know this community and I know its ability. And it's my job to get out here and educate people, each one, reach one, teach one. here in South Berkeley, we truly understand the power of the community. Friends of Adeline is 400 strong. We know we can stop things from happening here. We've basically done that sort of thing. So we want to be able to take the example of South Berkeley and the community organization that happens here and apply it to the rest of the city. And that's going to be number one on my personal agenda throughout this next year.
What's the impact, you think, of a national Trump election on Berkeley in terms of your ability to spread the word about community organizing throughout the city?
I think the thing about Trump is that it's going to hurt us in two different areas. One is, of course, Trump is bound and determined to fund sanctuary cities. Berkeley, we're going to maintain sanctuary status according to this council. So that means we're going to lose money. The second thing is that Trump is bound and determined not to fund housing on a federal level. If he gives corporations, for instance, the tax break that he's talking about, which is over 25%, that's money that's going to come away from HUD and from other essential programs. He wouldn't be silly enough to go after the veterans of Social Security, so he's going to be looking at things like EBT. He's going to be looking at things of federal housing and specifically Section 8. So, yes, this is a very dangerous time on a national level. Locally, we have to understand that we have to get critically organized to be able to meet these challenges, because that's the only way that we're going to be able to do it.
I guess what I'm wondering is, what has the impact of his election been on the willingness of people to organize locally, in your view? Has it had any impact?
I think it's a little bit too early to tell. I think that the initial reaction to Trump is, quite frankly, to me, kind of surprising, the amount of animosity and anger that's going on. The problem becomes is that just a flash in the pan, or are you going to continue to organize and continue to oppose some of these policies? For instance, when we talk about the issue of homelessness, it's on the cutting edge of everything else. It's on the cutting edge specifically of a federal housing policy. Sort of thing. We're going to see what happens. I mean, if people are that angry that they're going to get out in the streets for 15 minutes and break a few windows, that's not going to change anything. But if they're going to get out there on a day-to-day basis and start to defend the working class, and specifically unemployed workers living out in the streets, then we're going to see real change. And I don't give a damn what the feds do. They can't touch us locally if we become critically organized and have the will to oppose some of these things that he wants to do.
Do you have a sense that that's happening anywhere in the country?
I think it's going to happen in this country. I have confidence in that, knowing the people that I do throughout this country. It depends on, again, from when people start to do that. That's always a very dangerous thing, as we've seen throughout the 40 years in this country, especially COINTELPRO, some of the things that they do as far as surveillance and coming after us. They have no problem killing us, putting us in jail. You can look at Leonard Peltier. He just lost his son. And our supposed friend Obama won't even consider granting him executive clemency, which is what he should have done last year when Abu-Jamal remains in prison. And they won't even talk about his case at all. Assata Shakur still sits in Cuba, who needs to come home. But they won't talk about any of that sort of thing. So what we need to do is we need to recognize that our future and the future survival of our class is not represented by any single individual or anything that Trump does or anything on a national level. It starts block by block by us talking to each other on the factory floor and in each neighborhood. That's the only way that we're going to survive this whole fiasco called Donald Trump.
What is the situation in terms of local courts and police and local political prisoners, if there are any, in your experience recently?
The courts are going to do whatever's in the best interest of the ruling class. The police are going to do whatever they're ordered to do. It's kind of interesting that we have all these people just running around saying, I'm just doing my job, specifically the city manager. We have a chief of police here who thinks that tents are dangerous. Those people got to go. Period ended, those people got to go. Anyone that demonstrates an unwillingness to work with a community, they got to go. I don't care who they are. And we as a community have to get organized to be able to force those people out of office.
What are the practical barriers to getting rid of the city manager and the chief of police? What's required, a majority vote by the city council?
The practical matter of it is that significant number of people within the community itself have to demand that change. There is no compromise. You got to go. We did it in San Francisco, behind the hunger strike.
You know, hey, sir.
Yeah. Five brave souls sat up there in front of the Mission Police Department, and we simply just didn't let them sit there on hunger strike. We went out and organized. We went door to door, and we said, bang, this guy got to go. We went all throughout San Francisco banging on doors. This guy got to go. He's got to go. He's got to go. And eventually we got rid of him. We have to replicate that here in Berkeley. We have to learn from those lessons.
Do people want more information about any of the issues you've been talking about, where do you suggest they check online?
Well, the best place to keep in touch with us is on Facebook. We have a page. It's First They Came for the Homeless. And that's where all of our updates are posted.
How many votes did you get in the election, Mike?
Not enough, obviously.
Perhaps you're the spiritual mayor.
I don't know about being a spiritual mayor, but I think that we made a real difference. I think that we brought issues onto the table. We certainly rocked the boat a lot. I mean, just the reaction to my candidacy. And just yesterday, people from North Berkeley were going, hi, Mike, how you doing? I voted for you, sort of thing. So
you've got at least some votes.
Oh, yeah. Well, we got votes from places that we never thought we would get. I mean, anytime you start to talk about North Berkeley, I mean, in the Hills, and people in Claremont and Elmwood, people with $2 and $3 million houses, voting.
You've been invited to dinner at those houses?
I've been invited to several neighborhood associations, and we eat pretty well up there, actually,
Have they come down and done a spread for First They Came for the Homeless?
Not yet, but it's something because I've not gone up there and started to walk the neighborhood again and, make that an agenda item.
What are the demands of First They Came for the Homeless, or I should say the Poor Tour, or I see Operation Sleeping? Well, a lot of names here.
It's really very simple, is that what we're looking for is, first of all, we're looking for a moratorium on rage. Excuse me. We're looking for a moratorium on rage is number one. The establishment of tent cities, legal sanctioned tent cities, and then from there to go to tiny houses, and then from there to affordable housing. It's a very simple strategy. So our first demand is that we want to see a moratorium happen immediately on evicting intentional communities. You just can't, just people camping out and using tents as a means of survival. The second piece of that is establishing a legal campground, and they go from there to tiny houses to affordable housing.
Any connection with the Oakland encampments under the freeway?
Oh, God, no. God, no. God, no. No. No.
Yeah.
They do what they do, and we do what we do. This has nothing to do with those people. We are so much better at what we do than anybody else in the Bay Area. It's head and shoulders.
Well, I'm not suggesting they necessarily are better or worse. I'm just wondering if there's any communication between the different encampments.
No, I know a lot of people that are at the 35th of Peralta.
How are they doing?
They're doing whatever they were doing down in West Oakland, except now they have the city watching them and providing them porta potties and dumpsters. But they're continually doing the same thing that they do, which I don't particularly agree with that behavior. I'm not down there giving them any assistance, and I know people that I'm personal friends of mine are within that encampment, and I tell them to get the hell out of there.
Now, what's the story in Berkeley? I mean, this
This encampment here, though, is nice looking, and it's very visible, more so than the one when I saw it in its previous incarnation in City Hall, is pretty small compared to the total number of homeless in Berkeley.
That's correct, because of the fact that that's deliberate. It's very deliberate. Not just anybody can come walking up in here and post up a tent. We have a definite process of how you get included within this community and how you get excluded. We have a set of rules, an 8-point set of rules. You know, people must participate. People must be, maintain, good neighbor policy. This is a very highly organized, well-disciplined group. We just didn't start doing this yesterday. We're very good.